don't think you have it either, to say that, yeah, this state has it, and because of that, they have cut their murder rate down to, I couldn't find anything like that. And so if you have that kind of information, I'd like for you not only to share it with me, but to share it with the rest of the committee.
Yeah, and that's my point. I won't make that statement because I know I can't support it. But what I'm suggesting here is when you come up with a very concrete statement that it definitely deters or does not deter, I think that ought to be at least followed up with some substantiated documentation from a reliable source, and I'm certainly not in that position.
And I have
experts
several
out there, and depending on what side of the fence, depending on what side of the fence you're on, and you could, I'm sure, argue either side.
Okay. Representative Davis, if you have that, we'd be more than anxious to
I'll
take
be sure
a peek
to get it to you.
Okay, did you have?
Yeah, just a quick comment on the issue of deterrence. I think
was
that
a comment or a question? I'm going to let Betty go. She had a committee.
All right, that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Davis.
And I hope that the committee will have an opportunity to discuss in more detail when people get done testifying these issues of equity and deterrence and cost, maybe amongst ourselves. But, I mean, I have, Representative Cott, those studies and statistics that will show that statistics that show that it is not a deterrent. Now, if you've got some other ones that show
okay,
that
we're going to have a lot of time for that.
Right.
Okay, consistent with my statement previously, Bishop, please come forward and welcome. I want to, before you start, please let me tell Bethel that I realize there's someone there with a time constraint, and we'll get to them next.
Mr. Chairman, I do not mind ladies first. However, you put me at a considerable disadvantage following Representative Davidson. I feel like George Burns following Mahalia Jackson. I think I want to begin by saying just outright that I am opposed to the death penalty philosophically, religiously, practically, in every which way I can think of. And I hope and trust that many are going to speak to all of those issues. I would like to focus my concern on what I would consider a practical issue. And that is the effects that I think the death penalty are going to have, not on the ones who are executed, that's obvious, but the effects that they're going to have on society in general. I think all of us really need to address, and all of us, I mean legislators, religious leaders, educators, we all need to address the increasing level of violence in our society, including our state, and we certainly need to look to ways to protect people to ensure public safety. I'm convinced for four particular reasons that reinstating the death penalty is going to have the opposite effect in terms of decreasing violence or ensuring public safety, and would just like to throw those reasons out for your consideration. First of all, the death penalty is doing the ultimate form of violence to a human being, and it's being done in the name of the state, by the state, by the citizens of the state. And with the concomitant publicity that goes along with every execution, it increases the climate or the mentality of violence in all of our minds and in all of our hearts. Second reason, very closely tied to that, is as I watch the way executions are carried out in other states and the results that it has on the general populace, it panders to the baser instincts in all of us. Again, crowds outside an execution installation, you know, fry, baby, fry. It just has a way of inciting, I think, a greater sense of rage and outrage and animosity in the human spirit. Again, I say it panders to our more base instincts as human beings. It's not an elevating experience for the whole people of the state. It's a debilitating experience for the entire populace that engages in capital punishment, because it's all of us who are doing the execution. We can't hide behind the person who pulls the lever or drops the plank or whatever. The third thing, closely aligned to what Representative Davidson was saying, but consider this, that the death penalty, I think, is going to further alienate and isolate those individuals who are on the fringes of our society. They may not be well-educated in university senses, but they have a lot of street smarts. And they're going to see time and time again that the people who get executed are among their own. And it's only going to increase the level of frustration and anger and rage in their lives that's going to lead them to greater opportunities for incentives for just lashing out in the terrible kind of violence that we see happening in our society. We need to bring these people in. I'm talking about the poor. I'm talking about racial minorities that exist in our state. Again, as Representative Davidson is saying, we really need to try to reach out to these people and try to bring them on board to the fullness of human life. And Capital punishment isn't going to do that. It's going to have the opposite effect. And the fourth and final reason that I would like you to consider is I'm afraid it's going to create a kind of false sense of security in our people. There's a lot of people who want the death penalty because they think it's going to help. And Representative Kopp, the burden of proof in stating the death penalty is not on whether it deters. The burden of proof is whether it, I mean, it's not on whether it does deter, whether it does deter if we're going to do it. And I think a lot of people think, I heard the former President of the United States say on television that I happen to believe it deters. He said the opposite. He couldn't substantiate that any more than others of us perhaps could say it doesn't. The figures are pretty mixed. I grant you that. But in the public perception, I think there's a thought that the death penalty, that's going to solve a lot of our problems. And I would suggest that that's going to create a false sense of security. It's going to, in a sense, be a kind of placebo. People are crying for criminal justice, they're crying for security, they're crying for all these things. So we reinstate the death penalty and people say, yeah, we've done it. I would suggest to you that we haven't done it. The supporter of the bill commented that there are a handful of people out there who are not like the rest of us. Well, I perhaps philosophically would like to debate that. But forgetting the philosophy of it all, I would suggest for your consideration that reinstating the death penalty will bring us closer to that handful of people are out there. I mean all of us. Thank you for your time.
Bishop, thank you. See no questions. Thank you very much. I understand that in Bethel there is an individual with a time constraint, so I would ask if John Creighton is available to testify now.
He's left. He's going to submit written testimony.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have people here in Juneau and seven other sites throughout the state on teleconference for testimony. I believe we're going to be able to take testimony for at least another 15, 20 minutes, and then at the will of the committee, if we want to extend for a while, we can, or if whatever schedules will allow. What I intend to do is try to rotate as equitably as possible through the teleconference sites and here in Juneau. And we've had a couple from here, so I would like to next, just in order of, for no other reason, because that's the one that's on top, and it's also the longest list, go to Anchorage and ask if Terry Burrell is ready to testify. While Terry is getting ready, I would like to ask everyone here and in the teleconference network, please, we have an awful lot of people who want to express their opinion, and I would appreciate it if you could make your opinion as clear and concise and brief as possible and avoid redundancies. Terry, are you ready?
Actually, I support the death penalty by June 1st, 1995. In section 1258.110, issuance of death warrant, 30 days sounds something to keep. 60 days should be made longer or extendable so as not to make a delay of 61 days or more a loophole for the death penalty or extensive additional time and cost. Article 4, state execution. If the criminal is competent to stand trial and be sentenced is violent crime. There was, in 1960, 20,000 per capita per, excuse me, in 1960, there were 161 crimes per 100,000. In 1992, there is 758 crimes, or 6 million a year. I really support, and I hope that we push this through. I don't think it's anything, but you have to talk about the victim and stopping this this terrible, terrible upswing of crime. Thank you.
Terry, thank you. Just a reminder, there was a meeting in Anchorage on this bill for public testimony during the interim. And this is certainly not the last day that we'll be holding it here in Anchorage, here in Juneau. Thank you again. I'd like to next go to Barrow and ask if John Creighton, or didn't I just do that?
No, that was Bethel.
It was Bethel, but now I have him in, no wonder he wasn't there. Now I have him in Barrow. Is there anyone in Barrow that is desirous of testifying?
No, we have observers here, but no testifiers.
Okay, thank you, Barrow. In Fairbanks, I have an indication for Mike Wallery. Mike, are you still available?
Yes, I am.
Please give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Mike Wallery. I'm general counsel for the Tanana Chiefs Conference, and I would like to testify today against this bill on behalf of the Tanana Chiefs Conference. The reason for that is that we believe the bill will result in a disproportionate number of Natives and other minorities being executed. Under the territorial government, the statistics are difficult to fully analyze, but we know that at least over 48% of the people executed were Native Alaskans. The demographics of Alaska have changed substantially since that time. However, the current crime ratios and prison population ratios suggest that a disproportionate number of Alaskan minorities will be executed if this bill were passed. The inmate population right now ranges between 32 and 38% Native, depending upon which year of statistics you're looking at. If the Native population amounts to a little less than 15% of the state population, this trend is reflected in national statistics where 48% of the nation's prison population is minority population, and 46% of the executed people in this country since 1976 at least are minorities. Therefore, it seems logical that the rates of incarceration are a rough estimate of the rates of execution if the death penalty is in place. We know that sentencing, at least in the past, has been most severe upon the Alaska Natives, and at one time was as high as a 300% differential rate in terms of time served for the same crime, depending upon on the sole issue of whether the person was Native or not. These factors reinforce the notion that Natives will be disproportionately punished. Now, there are a number of reasons why that's the case. And some of these have been pointed out already in prior testimony. The availability of financial resources and other legal resources for the defense of minorities as opposed to non-minorities. There's also cultural factors, such as I think every state trooper will acknowledge that Natives are more willing to confess their crimes as a general matter, and that contributes quite heavily to the disproportional number of Natives incarcerated in this state. We need to study and determine the racial bias of this proposal. The blanket application to all first-degree murders with one aggravating condition is a grave concern in this analysis. Some justice system academics have suggested a thesis that a narrow application of the death sentence limit impacts the proportionality of racial executions or racially based results. For example, the application of the death sentence in multiple homicides or repeat offender cases has been postulated to have little racial effect. That has not, however, been substantiated. In this bill, however, the aggravating factors to be considered are fairly broad, including conspiracy and conduct creating a risk to three or more more persons and similar type language. These factors may be aggravating factors in some cases. The language is very broad and encompasses a wide range of behavior where clearly they are not aggravating conditions which would warrant a death sentence under any set of values. In our discussions with Alaskan criminologists, they suggest that a study to look at the racial bias of this legislation, if there is one, should include a racial analysis of current persons convicted of murder, findings of aggravation. The database is readily available to the University of Alaska at Anchorage Justice Center, although we've been informed that minor adjustments would be needed to deal with the gaps in the database. We also must take a look at the mitigating factors that are being that are operation under this bill. As I indicated earlier, it's a well-known fact that the rate of confession among Native Americans in general, not just Alaska Natives, but Native Americans in general, is much higher, and that this has contributed to the higher incarceration rate. It is odd, it is very, very odd, that in a society that claims to value honesty, the criminal justice system more severely punishes a set of people who consistently are more readily likely to confess to their crime. Mitigation, confession, is not a mitigation factor under this bill. And I think that it is only appropriate that those kinds of concerns that will lessen the racial impact of this bill be considered. We would urge this committee to hold a hearing on this issue, on the racial impact that a death sentence, as this bill proposes, be conducted. And I think that we can actually gather together at such time additional information on the populated impact and differential impact on Native people and other minorities in the state. I do have two other small points that came up in response to some of the discussion that we heard earlier. First, the removal of the notice provision brings to mind a time that I watched oral argument before the United States Supreme Court in a death case, capital offense case, in which a judge imposed a death sentence despite the fact that the state attorney general's office in Idaho gave specific notice that the death sentence was not going to be sought. The state argued that this was still fair because everybody in Idaho stands the risk of being subjected to capital punishment for murder. Justice Marshall asked the question, but don't you think it's basically fair to tell somebody that there's a risk of the imposition of capital punishment? And that question has always haunted me. The second issue that's come up here is deterrence. I discussed today with Dr. Copas of the University of Alaska here in Fairbanks the question of deterrence, and he's indicated to me that he would have no problem with me quoting him and saying that there is, in fact, no study, no verified study, no scientific evidence whatsoever that the death penalty offers a deterrence to deter crime. I think it's very important that this committee take the time, invite Alaskan criminologists who have the information to address these kinds of questions, because it seems to me that there's a great deal of misinformation about the death penalty that's being promoted in this bill. And I would request, in addition to this committee holding a hearing specifically on the racial impact of this legislation, to also invite the respective criminologists in the state to testify on this issue. That's all we really have today. Thank you.
Mike, thank you very much. I would like to also thank, and I don't think we're going to get to questions for him, but Larry Kinchlow of the correctional system in Seward was standing by for any questions that might have come. I would hope, Larry, that if you're still there, you can be with us next Friday at 1:15, and we'll continue on.
It would be my pleasure. Thank you.
Next, I'd like to go to Homer and ask if Janice Preston is still ready to testify.
And I would like to state that I support House Bill 162,
Alaska. When we look at a crime prevention bill package, we need capital punishment along with more police protection and speedier judicial action. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on the teleconference.
Thank you very much, Janice. I think I'd like to return now, if I can, to Juno, another individual with a time constraint, and someone that I'm sure we want to be able to hear from today, as he would have to leave otherwise, Mr. Charles Campbell, past director of the Department of Corrections. Welcome.
Thanks, sir. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members who are here. I've lived here in Juneau for about 15 years, and I served as Director of Corrections for 3 years, beginning in 1979. And I've had a variety of other jobs in the criminal justice field over about 40 years, including past experience as a federal prison warden. I'm here today to urge you to reject House Bill 162 and to reject any legislation that might be offered now or in the future that would reinstate use of the death penalty in Alaska. Those of you who've had time to investigate how the death penalty works around the country and throughout the world, I should think I would not have to tell you that it is a futile, senseless practice, and it saddens me that there continues to be efforts to revive this discredited anachronism in Alaska. Territorial legislators showed wisdom when they outlawed this practice 35 years ago. We should not turn our backs on that wisdom now. It's true that surveys show that a majority of Alaskans approve of the death penalty. But if Alaskans are like other Americans in those several states where more comprehensive surveys have been done, while they approve of the death penalty, they do not favor the death penalty over such sentences as 99 years in prison or life without parole. I'm certain that the approval of the death penalty by so many good people is a matter of misinformation. We know by way of surveys that a majority of Americans and undoubtedly a majority of Alaskans and people we've heard from today continue to believe that the death penalty has a deterrent value. And indeed, I think that it is probable that most people still believe that the death penalty is an inexpensive criminal sanction, and I'm sure we all know, everyone in this room, I'm sure, knows that is not true. Several of us sat here or in the other room listening by teleconference to testimony at your recent hearing in Anchorage. I was especially impressed by the testimony of one of the witnesses, a woman whose child had been murdered. This woman strongly supported this bill, and her testimony, as you will recall, was very moving. But I was astonished to hear her make reference to the notorious Ehrlich study, which purported to show that executions result in fewer murders. She seemed not to know that it was a study done more than 20 years ago by a University of Chicago economist whose work on this question was long ago discredited by the social research community and, in fact, by a report of the National Academy of Sciences. This is a situation that illustrates how desperately people want to believe that the death penalty has a value as a deterrent. Just two mornings ago, I was talking to a fellow at the University of Florida, a criminologist, who were talking about this very matter. He told me that he was convinced that from following the journals that there was perhaps not even one criminologist remaining in the country who held the view that the death penalty has a deterrent value beyond that provided by other sanctions. Now, there are a handful of scholars, none of them criminologists that I know of, Nietzschean philosophers and certain law professors, who still cling to that, but they are a very small minority of people in the scholarly community that have any belief that there is a deterrent effect. By every measure, it is clear that the use of the death penalty does not result in fewer murders or other heinous crimes. As a matter of fact, if you want to talk about it later on, and I imagine we won't have time today, but we can consider some very impressive empirical evidence which suggests that the death penalty may have the opposite effect. And while I was talking to my friend in Gainesville, Florida, I asked him what the present estimates are as to the probable cost of executions there in Florida, where they do them at a rate second only to Texas. He told me that the most recent figure he has is $3.2 million per execution, an estimate by the Miami Herald. not disputed by the state of Florida authorities. It appears that between them, Florida and Texas have spent over $300 million executing 103 defendants since 1977. Meanwhile, the murder rate in both states has gone up, as you undoubtedly know, rather dramatically. I mentioned a moment ago studies that suggest that executions may be more inclined than to induce violent behavior, more inclined to stimulate violent behavior than actually deter it among individuals predisposed to such behavior. I'm not suggesting here necessarily that the increased number of murders in Florida and Texas is a result of executions, but I will say without equivocation that those states squandered $300 million that otherwise could have gone to useful crime control purposes. Alaska needs to learn a lesson from that. Also, it's true that the inordinate amount of time it takes to investigate and prosecute and carry through on death penalty cases could have been much better used in fighting crime in a more productive way. And so why is it that there continues to be support for the death penalty, even among sophisticated people who know very well that it has no deterrent value, that it is exceedingly costly? It seems that sophisticated proponents of the death penalty are now relying most heavily on the concept of just deserts. We are told that certain crimes are so horrible, so reprehensible, so unspeakably evil that it is the moral duty of society to take the life of the perpetrator. This is a serious proposition, and we need to think about it. Unless you happen to be influenced, as I am, by the oft-repeated injunction in the Holy Scriptures, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay," if you're not inclined to pay close attention to that particular scriptural command, then I suppose you have to respect the notion of just deserts. Many fine, well-informed folks justify their support of the death penalty on that basis. But there is a serious problem. It's been referred to earlier today, especially very eloquently by Representative Davis. There's no way to be fair about it. Since 1977, there have been about 200,000 homicides in the United States. There have been 227 executions. It would be comforting to believe that the people who were executed perpetrated the 227 most brutal, heinous, vicious murders. But we know that that is not the case. In many cases, it is a matter of the luck of the draw, the quality of the evidence, the availability of witnesses, the status of the prosecutor's budget, and the political climate. We know that there are other even more regrettable factors. Was the victim white? And as Representative Davis has talked about that, that is a significantly important fact. And you've talked about it too, Representative Nordland. Did the defendant have to rely on appointed counsel or inexperienced public defender, or a cut-rate private defense of some other sort? Or was he able to retain the finest defense money could buy? It makes a difference. There is an intrinsic unfairness and capriciousness in the use of the death penalty. There is no way to correct it in a justice system that's governed by our Constitution. The just deserts idea simply doesn't work, which means that there is simply no way to justify the death penalty in our society. It would be a bill that would be quite the opposite of fighting crime in the state of Alaska. There are any number of things that we could continue to talk about. I know our time is limited, but it's already been referred to, the unique cultural and ethnic diversity of our state, the problems that would be caused by there. And I'd like to say one last thing. Representative Sanders spoke of correctional staff endangered by these special wild beast type of offenders. He's quite right that such individuals do exist. However, right now we have 2,800 people on death row throughout the United States. We're having 200 persons approximately added to that number every year. We're executing from 20 to 30 every year, which means that we have a time bomb, growing problems, and you'd very well know, Mr. Chairman, that persons in close confinement, as these individuals have to be, represent a far greater danger, an increasing danger to correctional personnel. I'll leave it with that, and I appreciate you letting me testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell, very much. I have We've got a time constraint. We've exceeded the committee time already, but what I would like to do, if get a few minutes, we have one individual in Sitka, one individual in Valdez, and I'll try to get one more out of Anchorage, and there's one more here in Juneau that I have on the list, may or may not still be here, and that, I'm afraid, we will be required to wrap it up. We will be continuing this hearing, as I've mentioned, to Friday at 1:15. Then we'll continue at that time. So first, if I could go to Sitka and ask if Mary Soltis is still there. Mary, thank you very much. Next, I'd like to try Valdez and see if Jerry Blank is still available. Is Valdez still on the line? I'm going to guess Valdez had to go. Finally, then, I'm going to start on the list again in Anchorage and ask the first person that is still there on the list to be able to testify today, and I'm afraid we'll have to ask everyone else to try to make it again with us on Friday. Is Randall Burns in Anchorage?
Randall Burns is here, but he's traded places with Rich Kirtner.
Rich Kirtner. Okay, I have that. Rich, please come forward and give your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Rich Kirtner, and I wanted to testify as an opponent to this death penalty bill. I wanted to testify as a witness, as someone who has been through death penalty litigation myself, and share some of my experiences. I am an attorney. I practiced in Ohio for 11 years before I moved to Alaska about 7 years ago. And when I was in Ohio, I worked on a number of capital cases. In fact, the last trial I tried in Ohio, I was the attorney on a death penalty case that went all the way through the penalty phase in front of a jury. In death penalty work, there's a saying that I found to be true, that death is different. And that I found to be true all the way through my experiences. And I'd like to share that just on two points that I think that you should consider. One is the expense of death penalty work. It's been well documented that capital litigation is much more expensive than even life imprisonment. And many Alaskans I've talked to don't understand why that is. in Ohio, in federal courts, and in most states, death penalty work requires two attorneys. The burden is just too much for one attorney to bear. And as it's already been pointed out, that will probably be the case in Alaska if the Alaska Supreme Court passes that type of a procedural rule for two attorneys in death cases. A typical death case may include anywhere from 50 to 100 pretrial motions. And when you're trying to save somebody's life, any legal issue that may save that life has to be pursued. And just the impact on the court system of trying that many pretrial motions will have an effect, I think, in our courts. Typically, a death case is going to involve experts, not only scientific experts for the guilt phase, but also mitigation experts and psychologists for the mitigation phase, which is a separate trial in death cases. A death case is going to involve two trials, and the guilt phase is only the beginning. The mitigation phase can be, in fact, even a longer trial when a jury has to decide if somebody is going to live and die based on a conviction for murder. The jury selection process, in my experience, just in itself, can be 2 to 4 weeks. Because in a death case, typically the judge is going to question jurors one at a time and have to probe into their feelings about the death penalty, as well as all the other issues that may come up in a jury selection process for a major trial, such as pretrial publicity and all the other factors that have to be gone into. So a trial in a capital case can very easily be months in the process. And this is only at the trial stage. The appellate process goes beyond there. In Ohio, they have a death penalty on the books for 12 years now. There are 130 people on death row in Ohio. No one has been executed yet, and in 12 years, the first case has still not been reviewed by the United States Supreme Court. When I looked at the proposed Alaska death penalty bill, I can see that it's going to be constitutional challenges to that bill if it's enacted as it is now, and it's going to be a long, involved process of 10, 12, who knows how many years, before it ultimately, this bill will have to be approved by the United States Supreme Court before it actually can be applied in an execution. Now, the second point I just want to make briefly is that beyond the monetary expense of death penalty work, in my experience, that pales in comparison to the emotional toll that these cases take on people, on the attorneys, on the prosecutors, on the judges, on the victim's family, on the witnesses, and especially on the jurors. In my experience, I've never seen jurors so tormented as those who have to decide life and death. This bill actually asks Alaska citizens to sit in a godlike position where they decide if somebody is going to live or die, and they have to make that decision. We put all that burden on their shoulders. And in Alaska, in a state like Alaska, where in high-profile, serious homicide cases, people are sentenced to anywhere from 99 to 200, 300, 400 years without any chance of parole, you're asking Alaskan citizens to decide if somebody is going to die in jail or die in a death chamber. You're asking them to make a decision whether God will decide when these people die or whether the state will make that decision. And it is a tremendous burden on all the people who are involved in this process. I know that prosecutors and judges, their lives have been changed by having to have this responsibility of going through death cases. And I've talked to many jurors that once they've gone through this process, would not wish this on anybody else. I think that if Alaskans thought that they might be in favor of a death penalty, if they had any idea of the process that they or their family might be subjected to in going through this process, deciding life and death when we already have what I think is more than the equivalent of life without parole, they would not be in favor of it. In my experience, working on death cases was like a curse that touched everybody involved, and it's a major reason that I moved to what I thought was a more civilized state, which could avoid this type of litigation. I don't think Alaskans, if they knew what they were in for, would be in favor of it. I thank you for your time on these comments.
Rich, thank you. I see no questions. There is one, I believe, individual left here in Juneau. Jeff Hendricks, is he still here? Okay, he had to leave too, so I think I'm going to try to be a man of my word and wrap it up at this point. We'll continue this hearing, as I have mentioned, on Friday at shortly after 1:15. I do believe we have one quick bill that we're going to try to get in, as we did today, but we will continue this hearing, and for those still there, we will continue it as long as there are people to testify. With that, we're adjourned.
That way you'll know where they are at least.
Excuse me for stepping out. I apologize.